Hello, friends. I'm concerned about the health of our African-American community. According to the American Heart Association, our rates of high blood pressure in the U.S. are among the highest in the world. And diabetes, obesity, high cholesterol, physical inactivity, poor nutrition, and smoking are causing us to suffer and die from stroke at alarming rates. In 3 John 2, the Bible says, "Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers." Visit PowerToEndStroke.org and become empowered to take care of your health. You are the power to end stroke.
For those of you that think that gospel music has gone too far, you think we've gotten too radical with our message, this is Church Folks. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Derrick J. Murphy, and I am a pastor, teacher, speaker, writer, worship leader, musician, all-around Renaissance man. And this week, we finally got Whit back. Whit Rose from around the way. She is back with us this week. And we missed you last week.
I missed y'all, too.
Yeah, it was a lot different having my wife next to me because she... Yeah, she's just different. Well, anyway, we thank you for joining us on Church Folks. Make sure you find us on social media at Church Folks Show. Look us up on our website, which is DerrickJMurphy.com/Church Folks Show. Connect with us. Let us know how you're listening to us and where you're from and all that kind of stuff. We want to connect with our listeners and make sure that we're giving you what you want. But since we got Whit back this week, what's been on your mind this week, Whitley?
Something I've been paying close attention to is a lot of stuff about celebrity wives, celebrity husbands, ex-husbands, you know. One story in particular was the story about Dwayne Wade and his ex-wife. And apparently at the time of the divorce, she was awarded $5 million as a settlement. And he, you know, left and took custody of the children. I saw a post where she is now homeless and stating that, you know, she's destitute. And I just kind of thought that that was awkward because here I thought my life was bad. You know,
right.
I'm on a standard salary, you know, single parent. And I'm like, $5 million and you destitute?
Right. I saw you post about that. And I'm trying to find it so I can quote you accurately. I think you said something to the effect of you've had $30 stretch.
A whole week.
Yeah.
With a 5-year-old.
Right.
Yeah. And we got by fine.
And you make, listen, I got five people in my house, including me, and we have made it on $60 in a week or a week and a half just to make it to the payday. I've been there and I've done that, and I understand exactly what you're saying.
So when I think about somebody with $5 million, I'm just trying to understand how you don't have a place to live.
Right.
I mean, $5 million, I would have paid off my home, all of my, anything that required a revolving payment every month,
yeah.
I would have just paid it off.
Right.
Bought a couple rental properties so I could have some continuous income. I probably would have bought a business.
Right.
Or something. But I'm just not understanding. Like I said, it could be more to the story.
Now, didn't you say that that Dwayne Wade has custody of the kids as well?
Yes.
I mean, so the issue is really, what does he have responsibility for you for? You're not married anymore. Mm-hmm. He's remarried. Mm-hmm. He has the kids. Mm-hmm. There's no need for him to, honest. I mean, no shade, but why should he care?
Right. I think that it boils down to, at the end of the day, a manner of living above your means.
Yeah.
You're not a basketball wife anymore. And like you said, no shade. I don't know the whole story. So, you know, I'm just speculating here. You know, social media only gives you what they want you to see.
Right.
However, that's all I got. So that's what we're going
with. That's what we're going to go with.
You know.
I don't know her.
Yeah, right. You know, and I know. Well, I'm not going to say that. But, you know, you're not a basketball wife anymore. You don't have the luxury of living that lifestyle. You kind of need to live like us comfortable.
You got to adjust.
Get you a warm bedroom apartment. do what you need to do to survive. So, you know, I get very angry when I see those ex-wives and husbands, because I done seen some husbands trying to get a couple million and...
what's his name? Kanu?
Mary J. Blige. Right. You know, it's not no different from, with a man or a woman. Right. I just feel like when you go, go. Leave why, what you leave came. Leave the way you came, you know, and let's, especially if we settle on an amount. So.
Well, that puts me in mind of a story. My dad used to take me to this place. It was a hole in the wall to eat breakfast. And
be the best places, though.
Yeah, those would be the best places. And there was a man, he had on jeans, he was dirty all the time, he drove a pickup truck. And my daddy said, well, he's a millionaire. Mm-hmm. I was like, really? You know, I was a kid, I didn't realize that, you know, millionaires come in different shapes, forms, and fashions. Mm-hmm. And so, as an adult, my daddy said, you remember that guy I showed you at Thigpen's? And I said, yeah. He said, well, one day he came to me for prayer. Mm-hmm. He had just worked out the deal to sell part of the business that he was in, and his part of the cut was like $15 million. And at the time, he was going through a divorce, and his ex-wife ended up with like $7.5 million, and he was just so sad and distraught and didn't know what he was going to do. And my daddy, being the spiritual man that he is, said that, you know, son, I'm really trying to feel sorry for you, but at the end of the day, you got $7.5 million. I think you will be all right. You might have to fry a bologna sandwich, but you know, it'll be fine.
Be
okay. Yeah.
I always see people when they win the lottery, you know, and you know, I used to think about it as a kid, like if I ever win the lottery, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna quit my job.
Yeah.
Now that I am a working class woman, and you know, if I was to come up on any amount of money, I think I would just continue to live life the way I live it.
Yeah.
You know, because first of all, Uncle Sam is going to get his cut.
A to the man.
He gonna get his.
April 15th, he sure will.
And so, at the end of the day, I think it just boils down to, you know, don't live above your means. My daddy used to tell us, the millionaires around here don't look like it.
Yeah.
You know, they just look like common people. They mix right in. And I have learned as an adult, the quiet ones usually are the ones that's probably sitting on.
Yeah.
But yeah, that basically was the main thing that I saw that kind of had me kind of like, what?
Right.
How does that happen? I want to find her on Facebook and like send her a message and just say, woman to woman, like, what did you buy?
what do you have?
What did you buy? Because I mean, I just don't understand it. You know, I was concerned. I think I was concerned.
Yeah.
I'm still concerned.
Yeah, and I think the best thing that you can say to that is, you know, as we're preparing for the show, you said you got to be able to find the good and goodbye. And if you got $5
million, good. I'm going to find the good and goodbye, the bad and goodbye, and the ugly and goodbye. But I'm going to also find myself somewhere sitting
bills
down.
Bills paid.
Okay, yes. Especially if you don't have children. So I'm thinking about, even now, if I didn't have a child, how much more money. Kids are expensive. They just are, especially as they get older. So I'm like, you don't have any type of responsibilities. You know, what you doing with your money?
What you doing with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, we got bills to pay. So let's hear a few words from our sponsors. This episode of Church Folks is supported by my latest book, Rewriting Murphy's Law. In a world where bad news is ever present and we're tempted to lean into that negativity, Rewriting Murphy's Law will help you rewrite your own narrative, because everything doesn't have to go wrong. In this collection of essays, I take you through 6 topics, including emotions, questions, and destiny, to help you see God's goodness in your own story. It's an easy read, and I'm sure that it'll bless you. So order your copy today anywhere you buy books online, or visit DerekJMurphy.com/books. Again, that's DerekJMurphy.com/books. Inspiration, motivation, encouragement, building people.
If you have a business, brand, ministry, product, or event that you would like promoted on this show, contact us at churchfolksshow@gmail.com. Again, that's churchfolksshow@gmail.com. We have on-air and digital packages available, and rates are extremely low for this first season. So take advantage of that and contact us today.
What's good? I'm here with a legend in the making. If you are from the Northern California area, specifically the Bay Area, you know this guy very well. Every person that I meet from Oakland, San Francisco, Stockton, if I mention his name, I automatically get cool points. It is the one and only Demetrius Tollfree, better known as D-Toll.
What's going on, man? That's funny, man. That was a very funny introduction, man. But thanks for that, for all the kudos, man. Hopefully a door may have opened just because you mentioned my name. Yeah, right.
Praise the Lord. Yes, sir. You know it's true.
Yeah, man. I appreciate all the love, man. All the kudos, man. I'm just trying to keep, you know, keep everything, as the young folks say, trying to keep things lit on my side of the country, man. So it's all to the good. And thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here, man. The first question I'm going to ask you is the same question we ask everybody. What is the one song that takes you in every time you hear it? If you hear it in worship, or if you're driving in the car or thinking about it in the shower, it takes you in every time.
You know what? What many people don't know about me, even though I'm from the Bay Area, man, I am a big J Moss fan.
Okay.
J Moss being from Detroit, he's from that same Clark Sisters lineage, actually a first cousin of the Clark Sisters. And matter of fact, Maddie Moss, of course, they're the Clark Sisters' mother, and Bill Moss, J. Moss's father, were brother and sister. Just for those of you who may not have known, there's a bit of tidbit of gospel history for you. But yeah, J. Moss, man, I'm a big fan of his. And he has a song called Sweet Jesus that every time I hear it, man, it does something for me, man. I listen to it sometimes if I'm driving different places, or we may pull it out every blue moon in praise and worship. And every time we sing the little song, Sweet Jesus, man, it sends me in and everyone who's around me.
I guess I don't really know that one. Give me a little taste of that.
I knew you was gonna do that, man.
Well, I don't know the song.
You know, I'm not that kind of singer, man.
The lies.
Yeah.
So, I have to look that up.
Look that up, man, when you get a chance, man, and you will be amazed. You will love the song. It's a good little worship song. It has a little humps to it, you know, to get you through, but it's a great, great song.
All right. Well, you are probably most well known for being a musician. And how did you get started in music and transition that into part of your career?
You know, what many people don't know, man, well, you probably know because, you know, we're related, but music is just in our family. It's just something that we have. I'm a musician. You're a musician. A lot of people within our family sing and play. Actually, what a lot of people don't know, if you know, a lot of the younger kids may not know, that I actually started on drums, like my son. My son is a drummer, and I started on drums, man, when I was like 9 years old. And, you know, I matriculated from drums to keys and organ later because the drummer, man, I never got paid. I was sweating my feet out every week, you know, and they when church was over, they'd be, oh, man, that you was killing. You was good. Then I'd see them hand a piece of paper to the organ player. I'm like, oh, no, this ain't working, man. So I'm like, we had a piano in my house, and my mother was like, you know, if you want to make some money, if you want to really be a musician, you better learn how to sit down at this keyboard, this piano, and learn something, man. So, you know, I took my mother's advice, started playing the piano. She gave me – I took formal lessons, but the formal lessons that I took don't help me how I play today in terms of, you know, church music. But I do know some of the basics from reading music, and that did help me on my way.
Yeah. My story was, you know, I would be the lead singer for the choir, and, you know, I had that high-pitched Michael Jackson voice when I was a little kid, and it worked in my favor. And I never just really had the interest to play any keys. My brother played, my sister played, my mother played, so it wasn't a necessity for me. It wasn't until I was about 10 or 11 years old that I found out my brother was playing for a church across town. Somebody slipped up and told me how much he was making, and I was like, So I sat down and started picking out Jesus Is Real with the help of a friend of mine and started playing from there. And, you know, hearing a story like that as a fellow musician, I completely identify with that. But what do you say to those who ascribe to the notion that we should be playing music for our love for the Lord and not being motivated by money?
Well, you know what? Let me just go on record and say that I did not learn to play the keys and organ specifically or for the sole purpose of making money.
Well, however, I did.
However, if there was money to be made, I wanted to be in the number right. of those that were getting something. But I mean, most definitely, I'm not the type of dude that use my gifts solely for money. However, when I do the things that I do, the Lord has blessed me. I have honed in on my gift. I have really turned it into a profession, not for the purpose of making money, but I do still need to be able to support and handle things in my household. You know, nothing in life is free but air. You know right. what I'm saying? It won't be long. You won't be long
won't be before long. Somebody
figure out a way to start charging us for air. So, you know, I'm like, you know, I have to take care of my family, man. So I do everything I can to make my family happy. And I am one of the blessed ones, man, still in 2017 that can make a decent living playing, you know, playing the organ and doing music. I don't do that only. I do have a secular job, but the Lord has blessed us, man, to where we are still able to play music and make a bit of a career of it.
Now, you are still a local church musician, correct?
I am.
And what church do you play for?
I'm the minister of music over at a little small church in Hayward, California. Glad Tidings Church of God in Christ. A young man that many of you may have heard of in the Church of God in Christ, Bishop Jerry W. Macklin, is my pastor and bishop. Young fella, he, you know, travels a little bit and preaches here and there.
Y'all see what he doing? Y'all see what he doing? So you know that when he talks about himself, you can see what he's doing. How long have you been there?
I have been there. You will not believe this, man, but I have been at Glad Tidings now for 17 years.
Okay. How do you vibe with Bishop, and how's your work relationship with him? How do you all, you know, do the work that you do of ministry from your perspective of music?
You know what happens with us, man? I try to stay out of his way. You know, he's a busy man. I don't really know how he does all the things that he does. He's always on the go. He's an innovative thinker, so he's always got something on his mind. So me personally, I try to stay out of his way, try to read as much out of him that I can. And if I need to call him, I try to make the conversation direct to the point, get the answers that I need, let him continue on with his day, man. You know, I don't want to necessarily be in his inner sanctum per se. I want to be able to do what I need to do that he needs me to do, get the instructions that he needs to give me, let me go on, do what I need to do, and, you know, we'll just move forward from there.
Well, I believe you and I are of the same generation, and, you know, the younger cats that are coming up seem to be the ones setting the tone for the mode of the service or the style of worship that is presented in whatever local church. And I'm seeing a lot more that the younger cats aren't really paying attention to what the leader wants, causing mm-hmm. a lot of contention. And you and I are of the school that, you know, that's my church, that's my pastor, and I want to do what works in his vision or in her vision. Could you speak to that some?
Yeah, most definitely, man. I mean, my thing, when I went to Glad Tidings, I didn't go there necessarily to be, as the older folks would say, a hireling. I didn't go there specifically or, you know, only solely for the purpose of making money, man. I need a pastor. I need a leader. You know, I need a church. I need a covering. And for me, man, I am very attentive in church in terms of what is going on in church, where the service is heading. The musician plays a major, major role in that. In the success of, you know, old school Church of God in Christ, man, a good musician can turn the whole service in a great direction where the Lord can come in, the anointing can come, can flow through there, man, and make things happen. Bishop Macklin, being a person that definitely flows with the Holy Ghost. I mean, I have seen some services where after the choir is sang, you know, the musicians can be able to push just enough. Mm-hmm. When the pastor gets up, man, it just makes preaching a whole lot more easier and may not have to make the service be so long.
Right. Absolutely. People don't really understand the power that the musician holds. And if the musician recognizes that in a negative way, it can really cause a lot of issues within the service and as well as the ministry of the church. And you're right. You can turn the service on a dime.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, and you spoke a little bit about being able to create an atmosphere where preaching is easy. You are also a preacher.
I am. I am, man. As a matter of fact, I remember coming to your father's church, man. I was in Texarkana one time on a humbug and came over to you all's church, man. Had a fantastic time. As a matter of fact, I got to hear you preach a little bit before I got there. And had a great time, man. The Lord has blessed us in many facets of ministry, man, which makes me more cognizant of my importance. Right. In the service as a musician. When I'm in the service as a musician, I'm not trying to preach. I'm not trying to, you know, outdo anybody or outshine. My role is to be the musician, man, and to play that minstrel role. But then when it is my turn to my time to preach, you know, I don't even do a lot of singing before I preach. When I come to preach, man, I come to minister God's word. And if I got a little bit left at the end, I may sing something then. But, you know, I try to stay focused in on what it is that people have called me to do.
How long have you been in the preaching ministry?
I have been preaching, man, at least 25 years now.
Okay.
And the Lord has, you know, the Lord has opened many, many doors. I've been preaching a lot of places around the country, man. I don't travel as much now because of, you know, job situation and church situation. But the Lord has allowed me to preach a lot of different places around the country. Many doors have been opened, and a lot of people have been blessed through the ministry that God has given us.
Well, as you alluded to before, you and I are related. I believe we are third cousins. Your mother and my father are first cousins.
Correct.
And I remember going to the family reunion in Kansas City, Missouri, I believe.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And my daddy said, you got two people that you need to meet. One was Kevin Washington, the preacher from Spring Hill, Louisiana. And the other one is Demetrius Tollfree. And you need to really meet him. He's going to preach during the family service. And when I met you, I was taken aback because up until that point, I'd only known a certain amount of my father's family. And my father was the preacher of the family. And then to see someone else from the family really flowing like that. And we come actually from a rich history of churchmen and, like you said, musicians and people who understand ministry and how to flow.
Yeah.
It was really refreshing to see you operate in that manner. However, a couple of months later, maybe a couple of years later, I got a hold of a CD of a young man singing, found out what a great artist you actually are. How did you transition from being just a musician? And I don't want to say just a musician, but how did you transition from being a musician to an artist?
You know, as you mentioned, man, singing is rich and deep in our fabric of our family, man. And the Lord has blessed us in that avenue as well. That particular CD, I think that you're making reference to, was my original CD, Save the Revival.
Yeah.
And man, you know, singing around the Bay Area, singing here and there, either with a group or on my own, many doors has just opened for me to do different things. I never really ever wanted to be a solo artist. I was always in a male group, a commissioned or a Winans type group.
Okay.
Growing up, I was a part of a group called the Cathedral Boys that I created with some classmates and some friends of mine that went to church. We all went to church together, and we thought we was going to be the next commission. I think, you know, we thought that was going to be our avenue. That was going to get us to the next level in music ministry. But as I'm sure you know, groups go through ups and downs and ins and outs, man. And what I dreamed of being this great big group that would tour the world together, we ended up at a certain time, man, ended up going different ways. And everyone, we let one guy in our group, man, that was a lot older than us. It was probably the biggest mistake that we made. But we had a guy, all of us were, you know, around the same age, probably within a year of each other. We let one guy in the group, man, that was about 10 years older than us come in the group. And he wanted to be the leader because he was the oldest. And, man, let me tell you something. He got in there, man, and started dividing people. And one of the guys started dating his wife's cousin, ultimately ended up marrying this guy's wife's cousin.
Ooh.
And, man, next thing I know, they done started another group. This guy is now the manager of the group. And so we ended up splitting and going our separate ways, man. And when that happened, what I thought was my greatest defeat actually set me up to be one of my greatest wins, if you will, from a musical standpoint of opening the door for me to be an artist, man. And here we are a couple CDs later, have, you know, even through being an artist, have traveled different places and doors have been open, have blessed many, many people around the country, man. And I'm just grateful that what the devil thought was going to be for my detriment, God turned it around and made it for my good.
Yeah, I'm glad that that worked out for you, because I'm a living witness myself. Groups don't really work out all the time if people aren't on the same page and working for the same vision. That's in anything. It really stifles the growth of whatever it is that you're trying to do. And but I'm glad to see that that really worked out for you and that opened up the doors that opened up because of that. And you're a tremendous artist, and you are able to toe the line between traditional gospel, quartet style, as well as contemporary. And when I heard your that particular CD, it was Saved, the Revival.
Yes.
When I heard that particular CD, it did put me in mind of Commission. Were there a lot of groups like that around the country, and was Commission just sort of an anomaly that, or the Detroit sound, that Commission Wine and Sound, was that just an anomaly that caught the attention of the entire country, or was that something that was in that time very prevalent and popular?
Well, you know, in the days that I grew up, man, back in the 80s and early 90s and stuff like that, there were only two male groups that really mattered. And that was, again, the Winans and Commissioned. Oddly enough, both groups being from the Detroit area, as you mentioned, man. And many people, I don't know if you knew, but Fred Hammond started out being the bass player for the Winans.
Right. Yeah.
And then from that, doors opened and they realized, you know, he realized what was in him, and he started the group Commission with some great guys. And, you know, even then they went through some transition as well, lost their lead singer. That's how Marvin Sapp ended into the group. And, you know, kind of the rest is history, man. Even Marvin was near the end of their reign, man. Some of the best music of Commission was prior to Marvin Sapp,
right,
a part of the group. But that Fred Hammond Commission sound, man, is a sound that has not been able to be duplicated, not well, for this, you know, last 20 years or so. Commission has still great songs right now. Matter of fact, if they put their heads together to do a reunion tour, they can make a whole lot of money.
Man,
Commission is just they're in a class of their own, in my opinion.
How did you get started with radio?
Now, the funny thing is, man, and not many people know this story. I got started in radio about almost 7 years ago. Freedom Radio was 6 years old. I was doing a show on my own for almost a year before I started Freedom Radio. A friend of mine, man, was had a radio station. It was a talk radio station. Mm-hmm. And the people who were working with him was like, man, hey, if you're going to be a Christian radio station, you need to have some sort of a gospel music show. And he was like, man, well, the only way we can do that, we got to have an artist that knows good music and can potentially, you know, make this happen. The guy called me up, man. I had never done radio, never thought about radio. Radio wasn't in my blood. It wasn't even in my thought process. But he was like, hey, man, we need a radio show. We need a music show on our network, and your name came up as being our best prospect to make this happen. I was blown away. Mm. Again, didn't know the first thing about radio. Had never been to too many radio stations. You know, I go to a couple of radio stations to do interviews in the different towns that I'm in, but never thought about being on the other side of the chair. So it started out, man, as just doing a little 2-hour show from right here inside of my studio. And it started building up. People started listening in. But the only thing was, they was like, well, hey, you know, I was coming on at 4 p.m. my time. And everybody was like, man, it's too late in the day. By the time you coming on, I'm about to get off work. How do I listen to it in my car? All this type of stuff. And, man, it just, one thing led to another. Another guy came my way, man, and was like, man, I think you could do your own radio station. I'm telling you, Derek, didn't know the first thing about radio. Did a little bit of research. Bumped my head a few times, but we launched Freedom Radio 6 years ago, and we haven't looked back.
Wow, I didn't realize it was only 6 years. I felt like I was way too late when I found out about your station. It's only been 6 years, so that's 2011?
Yep, 2011, yes.
Can you talk about Shop Talk and how that came about on your station?
Most definitely. Shop Talk is the place where literally no person and no subject is off limits, where we talk about literally anything and everything. It's a show that has, we have different co-hosts from around the country, and we get together once a week on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, right here on Freedom Radio, those of you who are listening from that way. And, man, you know, we have a bunch of fun. Yes, it's scripted out in terms of what we're going to talk about, but we never know what's going to happen next. Right. On any given day, man, one particular subject can take us on for 30 to 40 minutes that was only supposed to last for 10, or things that I think that people aren't going to be interested in. Next thing I know, we've got this long, blown-out conversation
right.
about something that I was like, really? I mean, this really interested you guys? I mean, it's just, it's really, really crazy, man. So those of you who've never got a chance to listen to it, if you listen to it once, you'll be hooked and you will be craving for more, like many people do around the world.
That's absolutely true. I discovered it, like I said, really lately, and I listen to it at work, and I work in education, and the job that I do, it gives me a little bit of freedom that I can have the radio on, and there will be times when I have to stop and go and do cafeteria duty, and I'm like, dang, I'm missing stuff, and I thought I was going to really enjoy it during the summer this year, but I ended up volunteering for summer school, and I thought my schedule would have me off in time to hear Shop Talk, and I was like, for 4 weeks, y'all, I wish I could be on, but I have to miss it. It is very enjoyable. If you don't know about Shop Talk, you need to get on it. That's can you give the times again for that?
Most definitely. We come on live on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific. That's 10 a.m. Central and 11 a.m. Central and 12 p.m. Eastern, right here on Freedom Radio. And for those of you, again, if you miss it, we have started recording the show. So many people like you, people have been hitting me up like, hey, I've been missing it. Does it come on again or whatever? So we've been recording it lately. And so we re-air it on Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific. That's 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern, same radio station. We re-air the same thing. And it's just as funny when we record it live as when you hear it. Pre-record. I actually listened to it this afternoon, and I was laughing at the same stuff as if I never even heard the show.
Right.
And it's a great show, man. I mean, what we're trying to really do is just really create a platform to give people a two-hour break from all the headaches and all the mayhem that they deal with at work, and give them a chance to smile. Sometimes, you know, it goes from being funny to being real, you know, serious and spiritual, to where we have moments where people are crying. And I mean, it is a great, I don't want to call it a comedy show, but it is a great show that is full of everything, man. It's got a thing for everybody. So we'd love to have you guys join and tune in if you haven't before.
Absolutely. And it is absolutely live and it's interactive. You can join the conversation via Facebook through the Facebook Tag a Friend campaign. I'm usually on, and I don't know how my schedule is going to work out when school starts. How I'll be able to listen, but at least I'll have the re-airing and the replay to follow up on.
Yeah, most definitely, man. And that also has been working out, man. People have been letting me know, hey, we appreciate the fact that you're recording it. We love to hear it. And even people who listen to it live like to hear it again, man, and they be cracking up, laughing at the same stuff, crying at the same stuff, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, it's a great thing. Now, another thing I want to talk to you about, as an independent artist yourself, I want to talk about the state of the music industry today, particularly for gospel artists. From your perspective as both on both sides of the coin as an artist and as in radio and in the marketing of gospel music, where are we? Where are we in this age of gospel music?
Man, I mean, you couldn't have asked a better question. We just had a recent conversation about this very thing, man, that this age that we're in now, man, this technologically savvy area and arena that we're in now, man, has been both good as well as bad to the independent artists, mm-hmm. because you now have things such as Apple Music, you now have Google Play Music, you now have Spotify and Pandora, all these places where you can now digitally listen to at the drop of a dime, or on demand, if you will, music, and don't have to pay for it. For an artist, especially the independent artist, selling your music is has really been your greatest and sometimes single most avenue to make revenue. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, with this whole thing of this new wave that we're in, man, where literally you can rent the music, you know, pay a monthly fee and download the music. Man, it's great for the visibility of an artist who may not, you know, beforehand may not have been visible. However, Derek, if you don't know the artist exists, whether you stream them or purchase or, if, you know, see them on iTunes, it still doesn't make a difference.
Right.
It's still you still have to have that engine, if you will, to get you out to the masses or to make you viable or make you visible to the world. I mean, granted, we do have Facebook, we do have Instagram, we do have Twitter and all these great things, but is that really enough?
Right. Yeah, if you could just kind of speak to the traditional structures of label and artist and how that dynamic worked traditionally before we introduced the technological advancement of streaming.
Most definitely. I mean, back in the day, man, and I say back in the day, 5-6 years ago, the biggest thing in the world was for an artist to be signed to a record label, because what that meant was that that record label would take on, they would be the big engine to help produce and to get your music out to the masses, whether it was, let's use a gospel-centric as something to think about. So somebody like a gospel-centric, back in the day, a good friend of mine, Lawrence Matthews, here in the Bay, was signed to gospel-centric. He was the most excited person in the world because now he was able to have somebody to help him financially. Mm-hmm. Together his CD, they were able to get the musicians, they would get the production team. That was that the artist never had to worry about any of those things. They would the record label would do all that. They had A&R to set up photo shoots, to do graphic design, all these type of things. All the artist had to do was focus on being an artist, writing the music, or if they weren't a writer, the production team would write, or they would take music submissions, right, and then the producers would make that song recordable and workable for that artist. All of these things would happen from the record label. And then the artist, depending on their deal, if they got upfront money, sometimes when they would sign to be on an artist, they would get upfront money or a signing bonus, if you will, to be able to do whatever that they need to do. Granted, now, if you got a signing bonus, you never got any more money from the record label until the record label made back all the money that they had already invested in you.
Right.
And then, you know, the artist would be assigned a manager through the label. The label would assign them a manager. That manager would not, as new school, now new school managers just, they just literally sit back and wait for the phone to ring. Ugh. That's what you do now. Yeah. But school managers, they were actively on the phone, calling radio stations, calling different cities, trying to put you together tours or to have you be the opening act, if you will, on bigger tours. Well, those days are gone, man. The touring musician or the touring, you know, artist, man, those days is gone, man. It's people used to fly you in, they'd bring your whole choir in and all this type of stuff, your band in, they'd put you up, all this type of stuff. Man, those days are so far gone. The only way you get a chance to sing somewhere now is if you happen to be in town, give me a call, and you can sing the Sermonic Solo before the pastor preaches.
Wow. And I think people don't really understand that dynamic of the live performance in relation to the produced music. They really go hand in hand, especially for the sake of the artist.
Oh, definitely.
Listening to the conversations that artists have, the real money is not made in the music production. It's made in the performance. Correct. And the people so often will want you to, one, perform for free. And then if you were able to sell CDs, they needed to be super cheap. They needed to be flea market price. And you wonder why so many artists fall to the wayside or they decide to sing something else.
Yeah. Every day.
And I think that so many church folks especially don't understand the business dynamic of the gospel music industry, that while there is a spiritual component, while there is a moral message to get out, just like you said about yourself, these people have families to support. these people have bills to pay, especially if they're signed to major labels. They got to pay money back, all of these type of things that happen for the artist, that it's not just about the couple of dollars that you spend. And you're right. The tours for gospel music, it's virtually non-existent.
Yeah.
The last one that I went to was the Festival of Praise tour last year. I guess that's probably the biggest, that one in the McDonald's tour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the Festival of Praise came our way in Oakland, man. I didn't catch it, but I heard that it was a real good show. With, you know, I think, man, they had so many big name artists on there. But again, these are, if you pay attention to the artists that were on there, these are 20, 30 year yes. veterans of gospel music that just said, hey, let's go on tour. Let's make this money. And the funniest thing about that tour was the mere fact that they had a secular comedian as the host going to all these different cities. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. In fact, the first interview we did on this show, Derek Keener, he was the relief pitcher, if you will, for Earthquake. When Earthquake's contract expired at near the end of the tour, Derek Keener did the last about 10 or 15 dates. And same thing. He is not, quote unquote, a gospel comedian. He is a secular comedian and pretty raw at that. They did. I think that was a good business move to get new people in the seats that might not would have come before. And like you said, all of those were veterans except for KCJ. At the show that I went to in Dallas, she only did two songs, and those were her two singles. Yeah. So basically, she was the opening act. There were no local opening acts. It was all that tour. So that that undercuts the local artists that need the exposure, even in their own hometowns. The industry has changed so much, so quickly. What has the adjustment felt like from your perspective? What has that adjustment been like?
The main adjustment, man, in my opinion, again, is the possibility of being able to sing somewhere. So, you know, for me, I have a different kind of avenue, because when I'm out of town and I go somewhere, I can either go somewhere as a singer or I can go somewhere as a preacher. So I have a kind of bit of a different view. Typically, when I'm out of town, I'm going as a preacher. I don't even really, you know, if I do, you know, go somewhere and preach, I will mention I got CDs or whatever if I have them. But typically for me, I'm going from a different standpoint. However, from what I have seen, man, things have really, really gone to a different level. At one time, I can even go back as early as 3 or 4 years ago, that an artist could be in a city on a Saturday, 4 or 5 churches would want them to stay over to Sunday, and he could hit up 3 or 4 churches on a Sunday, 8 a.m., you know, 10 a.m., maybe 11:30, a couple afternoon services, evening services, and make up probably just as much as they made the night before at the real concert, and be able to, you know, make things happen, sell CDs, all those type of things as well. Man, those days are now slim to none. I mean, we had Sean Pace Rhodes at our church just on a humbug a few weeks ago. She just happened to be in town, and she called me, man, late on a Saturday night, was like, hey, is it possible for me to come over the next day? Now, many churches don't even open the door to artists. And if they do, they give you a choice. That choice being either we give you a love offering / honorarium, or you take your chances at selling your product.
Right.
And I mean, that wasn't always the case. I mean, just a few years ago, that was not the case. You could go somewhere, they'd give you a love offering, as they call it, or an honorarium, as well as you could sell your products. Now, and matter of fact, back in those days, man, and again, I keep saying back in the day, but I'm just talking about 3 or 4, 5 years ago,
right,
the artist could quote what they wanted as an honorarium. Man, please, you're going to get whatever we give you. I'll come here, give us your best, whatever it is you got, your best song, your best medley or whatever it is, and we'll give you whatever we feel like giving you.
Right.
And if you got some product, you know, God bless you. Mention it while you're up. I'm not going to re-mention it, but mention it while you're up. And we'll try to get you some stuff sold at the end of service. I mean, that's just where we are at this point, man. It's really, really rough. My heart goes out to these new 2016, 2017 artists that are trying to make it solely as an artist and don't have anything else to fall back on?
And I guess maybe because I've focused more on pastoring here in the last 6 years, that I haven't really been paying a whole lot of attention to the labels anymore. I know, like you said, just a few years ago, there were maybe four, quote unquote, major labels. Do those labels still turn out new talent? Are they signing people, or are they just recycling the same artist?
Every now and then, man, you'll see a major label, and there aren't really many left in gospel. Every now and then, a major artist or a major label will sign a hot, up-and-coming, unsigned, never-signed-before artist. It doesn't happen often. Probably the most recent thing that we know of that is, you know, like the Walls Group, who came out of...
Yeah.
Walls Group came out of nowhere. It got signed by Kirk Franklin for For Your Soul Entertainment. I really, really miss the Sunday Best era. Seems like that is over, but the Sunday Best era really introduced us to a lot of great artists that we never, ever, ever would probably see and would probably never get that type of exposure, and they would probably never go to any of the cities that they've been to since they were on and got that exposure on Sunday Best.
We have a hometown hero from the Sunday Best, if you would remember David Michael Wyatt, that's my guy. For even those artists, I see that, you know, that came through and had that national platform, even some of them, as great a singers as they are, as anointed as they are still struggling to get booked, struggling to perform, to put out music. And I think that's just a really sad state.
I agree with you, man. And we can use David Michael Wyatt as an example. I met him when I came to Texarkana. I came to Texarkana for an event for some sort of a talent show type thing, and I was there as a judge. That particular trip to Texarkana is when I met Michael David Wyatt, and I was so blown away by his gift. I mean, this guy, I was like, man, you are an unsung hero. You need to be signed. And he and I kind of kept in contact here and there, and, you know, saw him in a couple of different cities. We crossed paths at a couple of different events. And then when I saw him again on Sunday Best, I'm like, okay, great. This is his chance. This is his chance, man, for the world to hear him, to see what he can do. And I'm looking forward for him to be on a major label within the next year or so. Here we are a couple few years later.
Yeah.
Still hasn't happened, man. And I don't know, man. Radio may be playing a part in it. Apple Music may be playing a part in it. The mere fact that everyone that has a microphone and a keyboard thinking that they're a producer may have something to do with it. I mean, really, man. I get so much music sent to me as a radio owner, a radio station owner. I get so much music sent to me on a daily basis. I probably get between 8 and 11 submissions every day of people that none of us know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and out of the 8 or 11 that I get every day, maybe one of them songs is good. Maybe one of those songs is radio ready. It is crazy. The music industry has, in my opinion, taken a major turn, and not for the good, because everybody think that they can do it. We were just talking today about everybody's now saying that they're a national artist.
Yeah.
What in the world makes you a national artist? I mean, I had one person say, well, I've sang in all three time zones. That makes me a national artist. What? No, you're not.
No.
The mere fact that I sing in the shower in each city I go to, that makes me a national artist. I mean, come on now, really? Come on, church.
Right.
I mean, it's just crazy, man. So this whole music industry literally, in my mind, has turned topsy-turvy, man. I don't see it getting any better.
You mentioned the part that radio plays, and I mentioned this because the nearest major city to us is Dallas. Yep. And Dallas does not, still to this day, Dallas does not have a 24-hour gospel radio station on the FM dial. They have one on the AM dial, and I don't even think that they are 24 hours anymore. What part does radio play from the national perspective of distributing music and singles?
Well, here's the thing, man. Back in the day, the biggest thing in the world for an artist was to be driving down the street, turn on AM or an FM station, and to have your music be playing on the radio in your car. That was one of the biggest things ever for an artist. I went through the same energy, if you will, when my music first came out. But, man, things have changed so much. AM, FM radio, terrestrial radio, as it's officially called, no longer gets the funding and the money that they used to get for. They make their money off advertising. Right. Let's just call a spade a spade. AM, FM radio makes all their money based on advertising. And unfortunately, their advertising is so expensive that the average Joe can't afford to advertise on these stations. Mm-hmm. So then what happens? They have to start then, as you just mentioned, start condensing their hours, trying to get people to hang out and make things happen based on the hours that they can afford now based off advertising. Well, about 8 years ago, 8 or 7 years ago, nobody in the world saw internet radio coming. Nobody could have foreseen internet radio coming. And internet radio swooped in like a thief in the night. Mm. People, you saw internet radio stations popping up all over the place. And for pennies on the dollar, people were creating internet radio stations. Didn't say they were good, but they were popping them up literally everywhere. And internet radio came in, man, and stole a lot of the thunder, if you will, from terrestrial radio, because they're able to operate 24 hours a day. They're able to play, you know, music that whole time. They can pre-program everything, man. And I'm telling you this because this is what I do. So you're able to pre-program your whole day, and you don't have to have somebody sitting there all day manning the station. It's a win-win. And so now the terrestrial AM, FM, man, they can't keep up with that because they can't afford to lower their prices any lower to try to be competitive. And internet radio has came in and stole their thunder. However, now here we are in a new technology age where Apple Music and Google Play and Rhapsody and Spotify is now stealing the thunder from internet radio. I'm telling you, the music game is changing. It's always being evolutionized, man. And if you can't keep up with them curveballs, if you can't keep up with them sliders that the music game is throwing, then you end up closing your doors.
Wow. And let that be a lesson to us all that support the arts and that support creatives. We have to support not just with our words, not just with the word of mouth. That's all important. But at the end of the day, they need your dollars. They need you to spend your money where you say that you love. You know, if you don't buy the album, if you don't buy the single, these people can't move to the next levels that you say that they need to be at, because they're not receiving the revenue that they need to get there. Yeah. These things don't happen without money. Money makes the world go round. If you could give us your information, how can people follow you, see your work, and listen to your stations?
Most definitely. I am easy to find personally on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all the same handle, D Toll Free, DTOLEFREE. That's D as in David, T as in Tom, OLEFREE. Again, that's on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all with the same handle. Those of you who may want to be able to download the Freedom Radio app, you definitely can. If you have an iPhone or an Android or an iPhone or an iPod or even an iPad, go to the Apple App Store and simply search Freedom. We are spelled FREEDEM Radio. Or if you are like Pastor Murphy and have an Android, it's okay. We've got you in mind. Scurry over to the the Google Play Store, and you can download Freedom Radio, again, FREEDEM Radio, and be able to listen to us 24 hours a day.
Thanks again, cousin.
No doubt, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. Now is the point of the show that we open the doors of the church for any person, place, or thing, or situation that needs to come down to the altar and do some repenting. You need to be saved and delivered and set free. Who are you inviting down to the altar this week with?
I'm going to call forth all of you Facebookers. There's a couple of y'all that I want to address today. The first group of Facebookers I want to address are those of you with opinions. Now, I do understand that, you know, social media is yours. But if I post something on my page that is not necessarily in line with what you believe, you have the option to just keep on scrolling. Please don't get on my post and tell me how wrong I am.
Right.
Or how much you disagree with my comment, or how much you would like to argue this.
Right.
Because you might get deleted at this particular moment.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you need to really get your life or two, you know, and keep it moving.
Right. There's no need to pick a fight when one wasn't invited.
Right.
You know, you just stating something that you think.
That I think.
Let people think what they want to. Let people. I ain't going to say that. I don't want to intrude in on your. altar call, but you know, when people you give an opinion and people will, or you'll say something like, for example, fireworks on 4th of July, mm-hmm. where you know that, you know, the slaves was picking cotton on the 4th. Oh my God, can I just enjoy some barbecue?
You know what? I'm glad you said that, because now I know I had my own, my doors at the church, but that brings up another topic that I like to address. You woke, all the woke people. I want to just say go to sleep. Take a nap. Because, you know, I get it. I'm probably one of the most conscious people.
Right.
You know, I know what my ancestors endured. I know that they fought hard, and these dates probably have some other underlying meaning or whatever. But I don't want to know that on the 4th of July.
Right.
And, you know, if that's what you think. But it's always funny that the same people that have these woke opinions, they eat.
Yeah.
Like, don't celebrate the day at all if
exactly.
you feel like it's, you know, not really a day that we should be celebrating. Well, you probably don't eat no barbecue.
That's right.
I think I said that on the 4th. I said, if you woke, don't eat. Don't let me catch you with a ribby on that.
You bet not. Well, my doors of the church is along the same line of Facebook, social media. It's amazing to me how things have become so commercial, mm-hmm. where I could just get on the Facebook and scroll through and, you know, look at my friends, my actual friends, people mm-hmm. I actually know, and see their pictures and things that they're saying. And now I'm having to see all of these commercials and ad posts. I was trying to watch Kev on Stage, All Deaf Digital video.
Mm-hmm.
And right in the middle of the video, as it was starting to get really funny, the video stops and they said, you can finish this video after this ad. And I was like, why? I already buy macaroni and cheese.
Right.
Why do I have to see this ad on Facebook?
I don't like ads, and I don't want to have to upgrade my package of Pandora to get ad-free listening.
Right.
Just keep them.
It's crazy.
Just keep them.
So I think at the end of the day, this social media. The woes of social media.
Church Folks and Kingdom Culture are the intellectual properties of Derek J. Murphy and Derek J. Murphy Enterprises, and is produced by Derek J. Murphy and Whitley Watson, assisted by Adrian Brown and our intern Tyler Hollowell. Music provided by Chuck Price.
Make sure to visit us on the web at derekjmurphy.com/churchfolkshow. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Church Folk Show. You can follow Wit on Facebook as Wit Rose and on Instagram at @me_WitLove. And you can follow me at I am Derek J. Murphy. That's DerekJMurphy. Everywhere but Snapchat, because you know I don't do that.
Make sure to tell a friend about the show and spread a little good news. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe on iTunes, Google Music, and SoundCloud, and give us a 5-star rating, because it really helps.
And don't forget Stitcher. We're on Stitcher as well. So until next week, may the Lord watch between me and thee. Peace. Now, exclusively for our podcast listeners and subscribers, here's a little bit more with Demetrius Tolfrey.
I have one last question. What is your view of the state of the music that's being produced today? And I ask this because I just recently got a hold to Anita Wilson's Sunday Song CD, and it took me back to 1997, 98, when I was in full swing doing music ministry, to the live gospel concert, church music, Sunday morning ready. Then I flip over to catch the new single from the Walls Group, which is still hot, by the way, My Life. And that the genre of the R&B trap music, you know, the I love God, you don't love God, what's wrong with you, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the state of the music itself right now?
I mean, for me, man, from a musician standpoint, from a minister of music standpoint, someone that deals with choirs on a regular basis, man, there isn't a whole lot of good choir music out there unless you do some extensive searching. It's really hard to find good music that is worship ready for the Sunday morning church goer. Don't get me wrong. I like the urban gospel movement, man. I can get with that. But for me, man, I still need to be able to have something that when I go to choir rehearsal, hey, have you heard this? This is the hottest thing in gospel music right now. It's crazy, man. Music, oh my God. This is really opening up a whole different thing, man. I was just talking to a friend earlier today. James Fortune, who everyone knows,
yeah,
came back with his latest CD, which I actually purchased. But he is the number one gospel. He has the number one CD in gospel right now.
Right.
Okay. A week ago, he was number one too. And a week ago, when Billboard said that he was the number one gospel artist or the number one CD at that point, he'd only sold 3,000 units.
That's crazy. That is so crazy to me.
Yeah, but he's the number one selling gospel album in America according to Billboard, but only sold 3,000 units, man. So that just lets me know, man, people, even the big artists, I mean, James Fortune came out of nowhere and became a major artist.
Yeah.
Just talking. He got that Kirk Franklin talk thing, man, and he has come up and become a major, major artist. But even he is now starting to struggle because either the music he's making, people don't want to hear that kind of music right now.
Right.
They want more of the urban type stuff or whatever. It's really hard to say, man. Church as a whole is changing. Music as a whole is changing. The whole world that we live in, man, is changing. And if we aren't able to, like I said, dodge those dodgeballs, those fastballs that's coming, and be able to work our way around those curves and swing at that slider, we're going to be left in the dust.
I mentioned 1997 and 98. That was a particular year for me as a musician. Then I was doing citywide workshops, and that was when we had a big rise of youth choirs, and the kids were singing. And what we basically did at our church, my dad's church, a friend of mine named Kenny Dunn, he created what was called the Back to School Workshop, and we would call basically all the youth choirs from every major church in town, every small church in town. If you had singers, let's go. Let's learn some music. We introduced them to a whole slew of artists that they had never heard before, like James Hall. We did a Lawrence Matthews song from his first CD. That people that they had never heard of, because all they knew at that time was Kirk Franklin. Mm-hmm. And we even introduced on a major stage praise dancing at that workshop. So it was a major thing. But what I see now is that we don't have any youth choirs anymore.
You're right. You're right. As a matter of fact, at my church, as big of a church as we have, man, our youth choir, we may have 12 kids.
Wow.
In our youth choir. Our young adults, we might have 15 people in the young adult choir. We're getting ready for our young adult weekend this coming weekend. I've been working with the choir for the last couple of weeks. They may have 15 people in the choir. Wow. Maybe.
Yeah, and even the choir at large, the church choir has been replaced with the praise team.
Most definitely.
How has that dynamic from your perspective as a musician and from a content creator, songwriter, how has that shift presented a challenge to those who want to preserve? I mean, because part of being in church is tradition, and I know a lot of folks don't want to hear that, but part of being in church is to maintain tradition. And how is it that we are losing the gospel sound and moving into this new age of other stuff?
Yeah, it's really eye opening, man. You know, because again, I'm a part of a dying breed, if you will, in terms of a musician, man. I still thrive off being a part of the choir, playing with the choir, all those type of things. And, you know, the praise and worship thing, I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love, you know, the whole praise and worship movement. But I think it has its role. But the only unfortunate thing, and we're experiencing this even in California, is that people don't have time for church like that no longer. So they want to be able to come in, have an hour and a half, no more than 2 hour service, and be gone on their day. As a matter of fact, I don't know when the last time you've been to maybe like Atlanta or anything like that, man, but I went to Atlanta not long ago, and I went to a few different churches while I was in town, just doing some different things, singing at some different places. And every church I went to, they all had a timer in the church. Mm. Everybody had a timer. So everybody who was on program had to pay attention to the timer that was on them, including the preacher. The preacher himself was on a timer. So the praise and worship had a certain amount of minutes. Then the choir got up. The choir had a certain amount of time to do their thing. Offering, it was on a timer. It had a certain amount of time to raise the offering. When the preacher got up to preach from beginning to end, even he was on a timer, man. So where do we give God? Are we putting God on that same timer? Mm. Because when we want to have more of a praise and worship experience instead of the whole full gamut of what goes along with church. I mean, it's a weird state that we're in, man, and it's unfamiliar to me completely, and I don't want to make it familiar. Mm. I still want to experience the wholeness, the awesomeness, the randomness of God when He comes, whenever He comes in. That's all right with me. Turn the timer off and let God have His way, man. I mean, whether it's from the praise and worship team ushering us to one level, or if it's the choir ushering us to another level, or if just the Lord without any music wants to come in and have His way, do we put Him on a timer? Do we write Him into the program? Mm. Or say, okay, God, I know You want to have Your way, but we got somewhere else to be. We've only got 15 minutes.
Yeah. I am an old millennial. You know, I was born in 1979, so I'm technically, I think that's generation, was that Generation X?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm an old millennial, and so I have an appreciation for the old school. At the same time, as a millennial pastor, you know, the oldest in our church is mid-40s. And I do recognize the needs of the people. But you spoke to that in such a great way that I want you to speak a little bit more to it. It's not just about the content that we're creating. It's about responding to the culture, the millennial culture. Do you think the church can survive? And that's sort of a loaded question, but you can answer it anyway. Do you think the church can survive this current millennial culture and the way that we are going in our, not only in our thinking, but in the logistics of how we live our lives? How can the church survive that?
Man, we are in a place that I never in a million years thought I would be in. Churches are no longer full. Even in the area where I am, man, churches are no longer full. People are making more money, but they have less time to come to church. Mm. People are making more money, but they are giving less in the offering. People are making more money, living in better houses than they've ever lived, wearing better clothes than they've been able to wear. But they only still giving God just a few moments of their time when He's the one who has blessed them to have all the things that they've been able to obtain, from the education to the know-how to be technologically savvy and all these different type of things, man. Can the church survive? The church, man, the church can survive, but the church has to be just as savvy as the people that go to the church.
Right.
You have to be just as savvy. You have to be just as smart. And even in that, that takes an anointing.
Yes.
You have to be anointed to be able to move and make things happen, man, to be able to keep up with the times, man. People in my age range, I'm in my mid-40s. People in my age range, man, are trying to keep up with this whole millennial thing, but the millennials are starting to take over. I mean, I'm telling you, we're seeing a day that I never, ever thought I'd see, man, where people would stop going to church in lieu of going to Starbucks or in lieu of going shopping or hanging out with their friends. When I thought hanging out with your friends at church was the greatest thing, man, nah, they want to go to the mall or they want to create apps or they want to build websites or figure out other ways, man, to make money. People are no longer working 5 days a week traditionally.
Right.
There are people, man, working the full 7 days a week. Or in our area where we are, people commute to they commute to work all week because in order to get the best buck for them, you know, get the best bang for their buck, they have to move out of the metropolitan area and move into more a suburban area. I've had to do the same thing. And so we live in a more suburban area, so it takes me 40 minutes to get to church. Well, I have a unique situation where I work from home, but if I traveled to work every day, you know, back to the Bay every day, 45 minutes or an hour and a half with traffic, then, you know, you that Monday through Friday. Saturday, you know, people get their hair cut. They get their car washed. They might, you know, catch a movie or something like that. By the time Sunday comes, that's really my only day off.
Yeah.
And then, if you're like me, you got to commute back to church. Well, come on, I'm not ultimately going to commute back to church if this is my only real day off. And this is what is happening to the churches at large, man, especially, again, in the Bay Area. A lot of people are moving out of the Bay, so to speak. They're moving into more suburban areas where they can get more house for their money, but they still have to commute back to the Bay because that's where the jobs are, because there's no real jobs in the suburban areas. And, man, I'm telling you, by the time they do all these different type of things, building and establishing families, got kids and all this type of stuff in the neighborhood, man, church in many cases can be the last thing on their mind. Or if they do, pastor, go to church, they do it online.
Yeah.
Online, this millennial thing of being able to go online has taken a lot of people out of the church. And I'm not mad that you're not coming to the church, but are you still tithing? Does that church have what is needed for you to be able to tithe digitally or from where you are? So these are the type of things. Well, that's what I was saying. When you ask me, can the church make it? The church has to be able to keep up with technology to make things accessible to everybody that wants to be a part of their ministry.
Well, man, this is the conversation that we could talk all day. I do appreciate you coming on and talking with me about your perspective of gospel music and internet radio. I do appreciate you, and I want to say this again publicly. I appreciate you the opportunity to be aired on your station. It was nothing that we were looking to do. When I contacted you, it was about being a guest because all the stuff that you're doing as being a legend, the legend that you are, I couldn't have this show and not talk to my cousin. But you offered us the opportunity to air on your station, and we do greatly appreciate the opportunity to reach far more people than we ever could have on our own. And so kudos to you. Thank you again for that. We appreciate it.
Most definitely.